Chapter 16. "This is some bullshit," Private First Class Larry Devens spat as he used the Army-issued grabber claw to pick up something. The thing was gray, like everything on the dark side of the moon. The far side of the moon, he mentally corrected himself. With the sun well over the horizon, the only darkness in sight were shadows. Everything else was gray, either the gloomy gray of rocks on the surface or the blindingly bright light gray of the dust that covered the surface and clung to everything. Specialist Darnell Washington laughed. "I don't think that came from a bull." In response, Larry only grunted. The thing might not be bullshit, but the situation certainly was. "Join the army," my recruiter said. He laughed bitterly. "See the galaxy," he said. "So far, all I have seen is freaking moon dust." He knocked the claw against his once bright yellow, now gray, boots. "On everything."
"You believed your recruiter? That was your first mistake."
Darnell shook his head, though the helmet of his spacesuit did not move.
"Hey, Darla, did you listen to your recruiter?"
"My mother convinced me to sign up, but she told me the truth," Specialist Darla Walker replied, not bothering to look back at her companions. "This sucks," Larry insisted. Darla shrugged. "It beats cleaning up refugee camps in a South American jungle." "At least there," Larry ground his teeth, "I could breathe real air." The situation was 100% bullshit. His assignment was supposed to be the security team for Moonbase Zulu. He had applied for that billet, worked for it. Most days, his job was simply boring. The UN DEFCOM security team at the base was not responsible for protecting the base against alien attackers. The two Sentinels and the squadron of Guardians would and could handle that without any aid or interference from humans. The base and its attached facility for manufacturing exotic materials had a police force to take care of typical internal disputes and occasional criminal activity. The DEFCOM security unit, to which Larry's U.S. Army platoon was currently assigned, was responsible for guarding those exotic materials from other humans. Not every nation in the United Nations was on board with reserving the enormously expansive exotic materials for the exclusive use of Skippy the Untrustworthy. Some of the materials had potential military value, and many countries who were not members of the Security Council wanted to boost their technology level by any means possible, including theft. Larry was okay with guarding a bunch of weird exotic materials, especially as the job held out at least the prospect of shooting at bad guys. Instead, he was dreamily contemplating shooting himself in the foot to get out of his current duty. He couldn't actually shoot himself, as he hadn't been issued a weapon that day, and putting a hole in the boot of his environment suit was not a good idea. Still, a guy could dream, right? Half the platoon was out on the surface, not for an exercise that might be a bit of fun, or at least somewhat interesting. The platoon had rotated on and off the surface for the past 2 days on cleanup duty. A transfer shuttle, a modified Jirapta spacecraft, had lost an engine on descent into Moonbase Zulu. The shuttle could have landed safely without one engine, but followed protocol. The crew had dumped ballast before committing to final approach. That meant ejecting lower-value cargo like clothing and frozen food. And it meant venting the spacecraft's toilet holding tanks. Ordinarily, the holding tanks freeze-dried the, to use a polite term, solid waste material, and sealed each unit of waste in a plastic bag. That material was either recycled, yuck, or buried. It could not be dumped on the lunar surface because that would violate a stupid UN treaty. That was why the platoon had been wandering under the base's southern approach line, picking up crates and canisters and loading them on mooncrawler vehicles. The work was tedious, but it allowed the soldiers to be outside, not staring at the same gray walls all day. Larry had been okay with that duty, until some jackass remembered the vented toilets. That was why he was wandering around in a shallow crater searching for freeze-dried space turds. The ones that remained in bags were bad enough, but the bags that had hit rocks and burst open? Yuck. The reason he was there, along with Darla and Darnell, was totally unfair. They were being punished for something that was not their fault. The day before, a crate of frozen food had fallen off a crawler, gotten smashed by the crawler's treads, and scattered all over 100 meters before the driver of the crawler behind radioed a warning. It took an hour to pick up all of the crushed frozen pineapple, peas, carrots, and whatever else had been in the crate, and to scrape the remainder off the crawler's treads. The major in charge of the operation had not been amused. That crate had survived falling several kilometers in lunar gravity, luckily splashing down in a soft, dust-filled crater. The crate had survived that fall, only to be destroyed because three knucklehead soldiers didn't know how to secure a strap.
Ah, it's Larry, Daryl, and Daryl.
The major had somehow been amused by that. Old people, who knew what they were thinking? Darnell had Googled the Larry, Daryl, and Daryl reference and found it was from an 80s TV show. That was the real reason Larry, Darnell, and Darla were assigned to picking up space turds, to amuse an asshole field-grade officer. Totally unfair.
Hey, Darnell used his grabber claw to pick up an object. Does this look like a rock to you?
He waved it in front of Larry's faceplate.
Get it away from me!
Larry swatted at the thing with his grabber, and the instant the two grabbers collided, the two men stepped back from each other. Then the lightsaber fight was on, both men making low bsh bsh sounds as they slowly swung the grabber sticks.
Knock it off, you two, Darla shouted. You're gonna break something and we're in enough trouble already.
We're just having some fun, Larry grumbled, lowering his stick.
Besides, Darla lifted her stick. I am the Jedi Master.
She was about to step forward and swing the grabber stick at Larry when all three of their helmet speakers blared an alarm.
Whoa, shit! Darnell gasped.
Larry froze in place, turning his head to look in the direction of the base.
What the f-
All pers- The distorted voice in their helmets was drowned out by a burst of static.
On the surface, take cover. Incoming.
Another burst of static.
Enemy ships are-
The transmission ended.
Take cover?
Larry spun around, seeing nothing but the shallow crater for a kilometer in every direction.
Where the fuck are we supposed to do that?
Darla pointed to the rim of the crater that, while only a meter above the surrounding surface, was the only potential cover in the area.
Let's move out. Hey, Larry!
What?
Pick up that bag.
Larry stared open-mouthed at her.
I have to care about a bag of space crap?
If this is a drill... Darnell nudged the discarded bag with a foot. The three of us will have to come back here to get it, and that will make me very unhappy. Get that, Private?
Yeah.
Larry tried to bend over from the waist, having to use the grabber as a cane to stop himself from toppling over in the bulky, rigid spacesuit. That was why the platoon had issued him a tool that old people used for getting canned food off a kitchen shelf. Straightening up, he clutched the bag with the tool, securing the bag to his belt.
Hey, guys, wait for me!
The attack began as General Chang sat on a folding chair in an auditorium for his niece's piano recital. The timing was inconvenient, but enemies can be jerks like that. Really, since his niece had already played her piece of music, he was remaining there only to be polite. A task that became more difficult every moment, while the boy currently seated at the piano stumbled his way through butchering a piece of music the teacher had called Rachmaninoff. Or possibly it was rock and roll off. Chang hadn't been paying attention. His attention was focused not on his phone, but on not looking at the phone in his pocket. The phone was on silent, vibration shut off for the duration of the musical entertainment. There wasn't any need for him to check his phone. If any emergency required him to act, the security team would alert him, surrounding him as they escorted him to a waiting aircraft. That was a problem for him, actually. Unlike the other adults suffering through the recital, he couldn't fake a sudden reason to escape. Any genuine incident, important enough for the leader of Earth's strategic defense system to be rushed out of a public appearance, would be top of the news that same day. For the next recital, he should arrange an interstellar crisis. Be proactive. So he sat with a smile frozen on his face, lightly holding his wife's hand, while trying to ignore the heavy sighs coming from his brother seated behind him. His hand jerked away from his wife's as the phone in his jacket pocket buzzed with the quick zzz triple vibration of a priority message.
Sorry, he whispered to his wife as he reached for the phone.
Not moving in a panicked fashion, half a second could not matter. Not with a sentinel hanging above their heads. As the person at least nominally responsible for keeping everyone on the planet safe, he shouldn't cause undue alarm. Whatever was going on, it might just be... His hand barely touched the phone when the metal doors on the side of the auditorium slammed open with a loud bang, and his security team charged through, the two guards inside the auditorium having already started sprinting toward him. He stood up as the piano mercifully stopped, every eye focused on him, fear and shock registering immediately. "Sorry," he said again to his wife as he turned to meet the security team. In exercises, they had hustled him to a waiting car or aircraft or dropship, and they were not under any orders to be gentle. That annoyed him. He could walk or run perfectly well by himself. Opening his mouth to ask his chief of security what was going on, he was interrupted by a familiar voice in his ear. An AI. Technically an alien AI, or an AI programmed by an alien. Grumpy.
"Well, ain't this a fine mess?"
The AI was extra, well, grumpy. Over the years, the voice it adopted had become even more raspy, weary of the world and everything in it.
"Six ships just jumped in 20,000 clicks from the dusty rock you call a moon. I suppose, as moons go, that one's mass is a respectable percentage of the host planet. Certainly better than the two pathetic rocks Mars has. It's like that place isn't even trying. The
grumpy." Chang's voice was shaky as the security team surrounded him, taking firm hold of both of his arms, not so much escorting him out of the side door as carrying him along with them. He grunted as he was practically thrown into the back of a waiting armored SUV which burned rubber the moment his butt touched the seat. "Grumpy, identity of the ships?"
"No ID signal provided, and they didn't receive permission from traffic control, hence why this bit of fun is considered an emergency. Get it? The ships are Max Ulks in configuration, but they're using some extremely sophisticated masking to scramble sensors. No stealth fields, though. That's odd. Why do I care? My life is a meaningless hell anyway. Someone please unplug me now."
"Is Bub—" he cringed, refusing to call the horrific killing machine Bubba. "Is the Sentinel responding?"
"Nope, it's not doing anything. Except watching, of course. That creepy monster watches everything around here."
The Sentinel was aware of the intruders, and it was not shooting. That had to be good news. Bubba knew something that Chang didn't. Something Chang didn't know yet. He was gathering his thoughts when the SUV's driver slammed on the brakes, screeching the heavy vehicle to a stop beside a waiting dropship. The spacecraft was a VIP transport rather than a warbird, and not the aircraft Chang had arrived in. Taking him to the dropship was a good call by his security team. He had a split second to reflect on that before the SUV's door opened and he was yanked out. Seemingly only a moment later, he was securely strapped into a seat in the cramped cabin of a sleek dropship as that spacecraft's engines howled and the ship soared into the sky. The console in front of him was a single curved display that could show him any information he wanted, except at the moment what he most wanted to know. Why had the Max Ulks ships come uninvited? So, what did he know? Sensor data was confused, but the available data indicated the intruders were 6 warships, all Max Ulks in configuration. A heavy cruiser, 2 cruisers, and 3 light cruisers. Certainly not an overwhelming force. A force the UN Navy's First Fleet would laugh at. Or the First Fleet would laugh if those ships were near Earth. If the enemy's intentions were hostile, they had good timing. Good intelligence. He also knew those 6 ships had not received clearance from traffic control. Neither of the 2 ready alert frigates stationed near the backdrop wormhole had jumped in to report. That was not good. There were only 2 possibilities. Either the intruders had come to Earth the long way, bypassing the backstop wormhole, or the 2 ready frigates had been unable to perform their assigned duties. That was a polite way of saying they had been destroyed by the intruders. That made no sense. None of it made sense. An attack against Earth with such a small force? No attack against humanity's homeworld made sense as long as Bubba was active. Was the Sentinel active? Yes, the giant thing was transmitting its usual signal, unchanged. That was good. The Sentinel was programmed to respond automatically to hostile ships near Earth. Years of testing with robotic ships had confirmed how effective the Elder weapon was. Jumping in close to achieve surprise? The Sentinel was not surprised at all. In testing, A robotic ship playing the aggressor role had barely emerged from the jump wormhole when it met an exotic beam weapon that had been fired before the ship came through the wormhole. Slowly sneaking up to Earth in stealth, the Sentinel had detected and destroyed the stealth ship at a distance of 40 light seconds. A light on the console blinked. Incoming call from DEFCOM HQ. By that time, General Brooke himself had probably initiated the call. Brooke didn't need Chang to do anything. There wasn't anything Chang could do. The Sentinel was fully automatic. That is what automated meant. The thing didn't need any orders from humans, nor would it accept commands from any lowly biological being. Bubba had not taken action. Therefore, Bubba, for whatever reason, did not consider the intruders to be hostile. There was nothing to worry about. Yet. Chang told himself that as his finger hovered over the button to accept the incoming call. His finger drifted away, landing on another icon. A tap there alerted his staff to warm up the X-ray laser satellites. All 14 of them. Just in case. He accepted the call. Chang here. Kong. It was the upper crust English voice of Brooke. Why aren't the Sentinels shooting yet? Sir, I believe this could be good news. The Sentinel would certainly react if it considered the intruders to be hostile. They are intruders, Brooke insisted. Uninvited. That makes them hostile in my view. The trajectory of those ships will take them behind the moon. Chang read what he saw on the curved display in front of him. This could be a stunt of some kind. For what purpose, he could not imagine. Also, that was odd. The ships were moving slowly relative to the moon and decelerating hard. Did they intend to go into orbit around Earth's natural satellite? Why? I have the X-ray units warming up now, Chang added as his display showed the 14 satellites of the pathetic second line of strategic defense reporting as ready. The guard ships are responding. They will intercept. Brooke told Chang what he could see on his display. The UN Navy destroyers Calgary and Cordoba had turned and were burning toward the intruders, hammering away with active sensor pulsers, hoping to penetrate whatever form of masking the intruders had deployed, and to uncover the presence of any stealth ships that might be in the area. I have to go hold the Secretary General's hand, Brooke said with irritation. Chang, talk to your dog if you can. Find out why it isn't shooting. Biting back what he wanted to say, Chang replied with, Yes, sir. The call ended. Grumpy? Chang didn't initiate a call, he just spoke. The irritable AI either chose to respond or didn't. Yeah, what? Can you ask Bubba why it hasn't reacted to the intruders?
What, you think the two of us hang out in cyberspace, drink a couple beers, complain about you monkeys?
I am asking you to contact it now.
It won't talk to me. It doesn't talk to anyone. Except Skippy, and that supreme asshole isn't here. So I have that going for me.
Could you please try?
Don't you think I already did? Bubba refuses to acknowledge my call.
Please, try again.
That pissed me off, so I talked with Roscoe. That thing is at least respectful. I asked it to talk with Bubba.
That was good thinking. And?
Bubba reported that it is complying with its programmed instructions.
It does not consider the intruder ships as hostile, then.
That? Grumpy snorted. Or Skippy totally screwed up the programming. Oh, hey, there's a happy thought.
Jesse Coulter knelt down on one knee to fit a cage around the tomato plant. The loose wire cage fit easily over the plant that was less than a half meter tall. He laughed to himself. I'm an American and I am thinking in metric. Maybe I've been in the military for too long. He shrugged. He had the full 20 years in, so he could retire. But then what would he do? Work for Dave Chaika? There's an idea. He would be doing basically the same work he did as a master sergeant in the U.S. Army, but getting paid a lot more. That was something he needed to discuss with Shauna when she returned from Xandra's. In the meantime, he had work to do. Technically, he was on medical leave while his leg healed. That didn't mean he wasn't expected to do some work around the house. That's why Shauna's grandfather had come over to help Jesse plant a garden. It would be nice for Shauna to see a garden when she returned, her grandfather had said when he arrived with a truck loaded with plants from a local nursery. The real reason was Jesse needed something to do, and sitting on the back deck drinking beer while he watched his son run around was not productive. Okay, Jesse grunted as he hauled himself back up using the crutch. This one looks good. The plant actually looked sad and droopy, but water would take care of that. It would be good to have a garden. Since the Jupiter cloud had literally been blown away by Roscoe, Earth's climate had been unpredictable, seesawing back and forth as the atmosphere and oceans recovered and sought a new equilibrium. Or that's what the weather people on TV said whenever they got a 3-day forecast wrong again. Planting a garden in Wisconsin was a vote for hope that Earth would soon return to normal. If he could remember what normal was. It had been a long time since Columbus Day. Pops, he called Shauna's grandfather. Let's get the... His Z-phone vibrated and sounded an alarm. Oh, shh. What is it? The old man asked, setting down a shovel. We have visitors. Can you grab Johnny, please? He pointed to his son, who was digging in a pile of mulch. We're going into the basement. If this is a raid, Pops looked to the sky, shading his eyes with a hand. The sentinels will protect us. They will, Jesse assured his grandfather-in-law as the man picked up the boy who protested with a scream that could not possibly have come from someone so small. That means a whole lot of ordnance will be flying around up there soon, and broken parts of enemy ships could be raining down on our heads. We're going into the basement, Pops. Come on. This has to be a drill, right? Larry lifted his head above the rim of the crater, which next to him was less than 2 feet high. Guys, right? I don't know. Darnell reached over to push the private's helmet down. It has to be a drill. Loss of communications. Larry was increasingly confident. Something like that. It's stupid for us to be lying here. I'm getting nasty gray moon dust all over my suit. We are lying here because that's what we do when we get an attack alert, whether it's a drill or not. The scrubbers will wash your suit clean when we get back to the base. The scrubbers don't get everywhere, Larry protested. Sometimes they just get the dust wet, and then it dries hard as concrete, and I have to clean the crevices with a toothbrush, or the staff sergeant yells at me. He raised his head again. If you're worried about getting yelled at, you better think about what the satellite video will show you did during this drill, so keep your head down. Darnell gave the private another shove. The crew of the UN Navy destroyer Calgary was slightly irritated when they felt their ship's acceleration slacken for a few seconds, then resume with not quite the same vigor. The irritation was mixed with more than a small measure of smugness, knowing the reason for the temporary slackening of pursuit was the crew of slackers aboard the destroyer Cordoba. The two ships had to maintain formation, and Cordoba had fallen ever so slightly behind in the chase to intercept the intruder ships. The fact that Calgary was fresh from a major overhaul, while Cordoba's engines had not enjoyed the attention of a shipyard in 3 years, was no excuse for poor performance, and the crews of the two ships knew that. Their engines, however, did not care about the opinions of meat sacks. The rivalry between the two ships was good-natured, and the exercise injected a bit of excitement into what had been a dull rotation. It had to be an exercise, the crew members told each other. If the attack were real, the big dog would have barked, and its bark was as bad as its bite. The Sentinel had not responded, therefore the event was a planned and unannounced exercise. A risk-free opportunity to shine. A lame opportunity to show what the UN Navy could do. Only 6 ships? Really? That's the most the Navy brass could scrape together for an aggressor force? Those ships were using some new type of masking, so it wasn't possible yet to determine which UN Navy ships were playing the role of the aggressors. The people aboard those intruder ships must be having fun, and the crews of the Calgary and Cordoba were eager to show that the First Fleet's Home Guard force was not sleeping on the job. Another question that tickled the minds of the destroyer crews was, why the moon? If an aggressor was insane enough to challenge Earth's defenses, the only smart play was a quick hit-and-run targeting the homeworld. Were the intruders planning to slingshot around the moon, use that satellite's gravity to boost speed? If so, why were the intruders slowing down? Were they doing that to see how the Home Guard force reacted to alien tactics that seemed, well, alien? 20 seconds to weapons range. The destroyers had not received a signal to fire only low-powered directed energy weapons as a warning shot. That was odd in an exercise. Some trigger-happy idiot could cause a lot of damage with full-power fire. Unless the ship's AI had been instructed to disable the weapons without informing most of the crew that the incident was a planned exercise. That had happened before. 15 seconds to... Calgary staggered, the ship's engines dropping offline as the shields were struck by a broadside of beam weapons from the intruder's heavy cruiser, weapons that were at full power. If the crews of both destroyers were angry at being victims of a friendly fire incident because some moron hadn't gotten the memo, their anger was brief. Railgun darts from the now clearly hostile heavy cruiser punched through the thin skin of the destroyers from bow to stern. Cordoba spun wildly as two reactors erupted. That ship was lucky. Calgary took a railgun dart directly into the main magazine that held ship-killer missiles. The UNS Calgary ceased to exist.
This is stupid.
Larry felt free to complain as long as he adhered to proper procedure by taking shelter. The rim of a crater that wasn't tall enough to actually protect him, so it made no sense. But he was only a private, and nothing in the army needed to make sense to him. If there is a real threat up there, the Sentinels will take care of it. We are totally safe here. No, we are not, you dumbass. Darla kicked his left leg. The Sentinels protect Earth, not us. They are supposed to protect the entire solar system, Larry objected. Roscoe got rid of the Jupiter cloud and that wasn't anywhere close to Earth. I meant the Sentinels won't protect 3 people on the surface of the moon. Think about it. If a threat is so serious that a Sentinel has to shoot, a lot of ordnance will be flying around. It can get real kinetic up there. She pointed a finger upward. It doesn't matter whether someone shoots at us deliberately or we get hit with a piece of shrapnel traveling 1,000 clicks per second, so we keep our heads down and try to be as small a target as possible. If ordnance was flying around, we would see...
Whoa!
His helmet visor, not as sophisticated a device as those provided to combat mech suits, could not immediately adjust to the brilliant flare of light in the sky.
What the hell was that?
Something kinetic, Darla said, though in a hoarse whisper.
Guys, Darnell added, this is no drill.
No shit, Sherlock, Larry gasped.
Grumpy. Jesse whispered into his phone as he searched for a beer in the back of the fridge. Pops was down in the basement with little Johnny, and Jesse thought sitting out the raid warning would be more tolerable with proper refreshments.
Hi, Jesse. What's shaking, homeboy?
It was always surprising that the AI everyone called Grumpy usually was happy to talk with him.
That's what I was going to ask you. How long until Bubba takes care of whatever is going on up there?
That could be a problem. A group of Maxalt's warships jumped in and they just wasted 2 of your Navy's destroyers.
Shit!
He was so startled he let go of one beer, trapping it against his thigh with a forearm before it hit the floor.
Why the hell did Bubba let that happen?
That is unknown. Bubba's online and active, it's just not doing anything against the enemy. This could be a bad fight. I suggest you keep your head down.
Hell yeah.
Jesse kicked the fridge door closed, then considered the 2 cold beers he held. Being impaired during a crisis was not the best idea. He put the beers away and got 2 cans of iced tea and a box of crackers from the pantry, plus cookies for his son. The 3 of them could be in the basement for a while. Chang felt a block of ice in his stomach as he watched the symbols for the 2 destroyers flicker, then go dark. The UN Navy ships Calgary and Cordoba were dead and out of the fight. It was a fight.
Why the bloody hell hasn't your sentinel fired?
Brooke demanded. Sir, I do not know and I suggest you get the fleet moving.
What about your X-ray platforms?
They are ready to engage, but sir, the intruder formation is passing behind the moon's horizon. The X-rays are single-use weapons. We should wait until the enemy emerges again to ensure every shot will count.
Brooke muttered something inaudible, then, with the first fleet away on maneuvers, the home guard here is only 7 ships.
5 ships now, he added with bitterness. Chang, your X-ray team needs to take out the enemy's big ships at least. The home guard can...
A pause while someone spoke in the background.
Why the hell would they do that?
Chang knew the question was not directed at him.
What was Brooke's question?
Oh, that. The intruder formation, the enemy formation, was continuing to decelerate hard. Those ships were already not going too slowly to achieve a stable lunar orbit.
Were they attempting to land on the moon?
That was insanity. Starships didn't set down in gravity wells, not even those without an atmosphere. The only thing that made any sense at all was for those ships to use their engines to hover above the surface. To hover over the dark side of the moon.
Sir?
General Brooke, Chang shouted to get the attention of the man in overall command of humanity's military.
Eh? What?
Brooke was stressed, irritated.
Sir, I believe the intruders are going for Moonbase Zulu.